The Flames are out east, so the schedule is abbreviated for the program today. So welcome to the Sports Drive at 5 Eastern. Peter Klein with you today. We're kicking off the program with our NHL insider, Elliot Friedman. Elliot, how are you today?
So let me get this straight. It's like less of a show, so the other guys don't show up to work?
Well, Pinder is off in Australia, and Steinberg works about 18 hours a day. So we decided for an hour that I can sit in. And you just carry the segment anyway, so we could just have a trained monkey just throwing things out. So,
Well, which one of us is a trained monkey, Peter? That's a big question.
I think calling me a trained monkey would be an insult to trained monkeys. So I don't know if I would go there. We saw quite the game here Saturday night between the Oilers and the Flames. Before we get into the specifics, how damn good was that game?
That was a great game. And we were hoping, you know, a lot of times games don't live up to their billing in the regular season. But, you know, we were hoping that would be the best battle of Alberta and the most meaningful one, at least anyway. And I don't know how long. And it lived up to it. As you said, it was a great game. It was competitive. It was intense. Loved watching every second of it. And you can only hope, you know, they've got two meetings coming up in what, 3 days in a week? You can only hope that with these games being so meaningful and both teams being in the race, that they'll continue to be like this.
Now, the main talking point coming out of this was the Zach Cassian, Matthew Tkachuk situation. What did you make of the Tkachuk hits that sparked everything?
Well, I thought honestly, just the overall thing, like, I hope they don't suspend him. You know, yeah. I think the way they handled it on the ice was the way it should have been handled. I didn't have a problem with the one that led to the fight. You know, apparently there's another angle of the first one that shows he doesn't connect the head first. You know, you could debate whether or not it was a charge. That's fine. But, you know, I think in the way the NHL is played now, there's a lot of players who don't like the winger coming down and hitting the guy down below the net. But the bottom line is, I mean, you've got to be aware of him. You have to be aware of where Matthew Tkachuk is on the ice. And that's the way he plays, and he's a force in the game. And, you know, I have no problem with that hit right before the fight. You know, Cassian had the puck. You've got to be aware that he's out there. I have no problem with Cassian deciding to handle it that way. You know, I mean, Tkachuk took a beating to set up the power play that won the game for Calgary. That's what he chose to do. I don't think Cassian should be suspended. I just think that everything, the way it was handled on the ice, is the way that people should choose to handle it on the ice. And if Tkachuk wants to fight, he'll fight.
We've been talking about potential for a Cassian suspension here, and I'm with you. I don't know how the league will handle a guy ragdolling another guy for what was deemed a clean hit. But when you look at the schedule, a 3-game suspension would have him out for the first matchup, and 5 would take him out for both games. Do you see the NHL potentially playing the schedule as a factor if there is any discipline for Cassian with a hearing going on today?
They always say no. Sometimes I've wondered about it, but whenever I brought it up, they said no. I can't see Cassian getting 5 games for that. Can you?
No. No, I'm with you. I don't think he should get 1, but I don't know.
You know, I mean, what did Lucic get? Lucic got 2, right?
Right.
I mean, I guess in theory he could get 3. I mean, the one thing I think that's really been interesting is all of the commentary on social media about, you know, Cassian shouldn't get suspended. Now, I don't think they take that into consideration. But when, you know, the one thing I'm curious about is, you know, PJ Stock, who's a good friend of mine, he did the enforcer role. He, you know, I always wonder what, you know, George Parros, who did that role, thinks. You know, I guess, like, this is just me extrapolating what's happened. Lucic got 2. I guess 3 could be in the conversation, but I can't see this going 5. But again, I hope they don't suspend him. I hope they look at, because he took a big penalty. He took 14 minutes, and Calgary scored the goal that won the game. I mean, to me, I think that's penalty enough.
And as we've been saying here, if you are going to suspend him, have it be 2, so we get him back for the rematch coming up on January 29th.
I, you know, considering that game will be on Sportsnet, I wholeheartedly agree with you.
The Flames taking on the Montreal Canadiens tonight, and it's no secret, it's been a tough stretch for them. You said on headlines they're going to give this team the up until the break and then take that break to decide where the Montreal Canadiens are going. They're 8 points out of a playoff spot right now. Could they still look at this team and try to make one last push toward a playoff spot, or are they just deciding to what extent they'll be sellers at the trade deadline?
I think it's more of the latter. I mean, the one thing that's key here is, you know, they're going to have to do this, it looks like, without Gallagher. And I think he's such a, you know, he came back for the one game, but he didn't play again, and I don't think he's playing tonight, right? So, I mean, you know, they could be being very careful, and it's very hard to see them doing it without such a critical part of their team. What I don't think is, I don't think they're going to add. I don't think they're going to do rentals for now. I think it's wise for Bergevin to say, I'm calling a timeout and making a sober decision here. But I think it's more like, let's get together. Let's see what the value of our players is. Let's see who we want to keep and who we move. Like, the one guy, I think, if they put Petry out there and he's got one more year left on his contract, I think there would be a lot of interest in Petry. You look what Toronto got for Muzzin last year. They got a first rounder, or gave up to get Muzzin. They gave up a first rounder, a prospect, and another player. And, you know, I just think that you can do that if you're Montreal. But I don't know if Montreal's going to want to do that, because I think the consideration is they don't want to do anything that might not allow them to go to the playoffs next year. So I think it's going to be a big decision. I do think that Petrie's availability would interest a lot of teams, although I'm not convinced yet he is available.
On the subject of Canadian teams and defensemen, the Toronto Maple Leafs might be in the market for one, with news coming out that Morgan Rielly is going to be out 8 weeks. I would imagine the Leafs now probably pretty active in looking for a defenseman who could be on that target list for Toronto.
Well, I think the problem with that is that he's coming back, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to account for his money. Right. And, you know, we know they're already in long-term injury. They've been beaten up all year. You know, I just think that they are in a situation where I'm not sure they're going to be able to do that unless they trade something that eases their cap crunch. So, you know, they called up Sandin today. He's going to get a run. I think it's more likely they see what he can do. I'm just not sure, depending on what they're looking at, in terms of removing to add something, because they're going to have to account for Rielly coming back.
Chatting with our NHL insider, Elliot Friedman, here on the Sports Drive at 5 on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Over the weekend, the New Jersey Devils and Ray Shiro parting ways. Obviously very early in this process, but who are some of the names at the top of the GM candidate list right now?
Well, I think the one thing I think is, I think Tom Fitzgerald is going to have a good chance to keep it. I don't know what odds I would put at it, but I think he's got a shot because he's been there. He's got institutional knowledge. They know him, and he's going to get a chance to shepherd them through their situation here. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if out of this, you know, Fitzgerald becomes a contender, a legit contender for that job. But I think the other thing is what's going to happen with Brodeur. You know, right now they've got Brodeur listed as an advisor. You know, I don't think he wants to be the full-time GM, but I could see him being I could see him wanting that, like the Shanahan-style position, the president of hockey operations. And so I think that that's going to answer two very big questions. Number one, what is Brodeur's role? And number two, is this really an addition for Fitzgerald? I mean, you've heard all the names. I think all the key names are kind of out there. I'm sure you'll hear your guy, I'm sure you're going to hear Craig Conroy's name brought up potentially as a contender for this. And I do think Conroy's day is going to come. But I think that right now, a lot of it depends on what Brodeur wants long term. And I think a lot of it could depend on the job that Fitzgerald does, because I think they are going to do some selling. I think their UFAs are going to become available.
Any word on why now with what's going on in New Jersey? Was there a straw that broke the camel's back in this situation?
Yeah, I'm told specifically no, but the one thing I have heard, Peter, is that over the last couple of months, and that includes the Taylor Hall trade conversations, I think there was a crack that grew between Ray Shiro and some people in that organization. I think they felt that, you know, Shiro got a big extension last year. I think he got a four-year deal. And I think that's the wildest thing about all this is you go from that extension to here. And I just think the frustration of this year plus the debate about how to attack, what to happen now, I just heard there were philosophical differences and they weren't on the same page. And I think the other thing that I'm hearing is, like, New Jersey's got a pretty interesting front office setup there. You know, before, you know, kind of Shiro was a big decision maker. Well, I think they want to involve more people. I think now Brodeur became more involved during the Hall trade talks. They also have an analytics department where the analytics person, who's Tyler Dello, he reports directly to ownership. And I heard they just want more of a collaborative process in their decision making. And I'm not sure, I haven't spoken to Shiro, but I heard maybe he wasn't comfortable with that. And that was a factor too. So I just think it sounds like there was a big philosophical divide that broke out over the last couple of months, especially as the season went poorly. And for that reason, I think he wasn't comfortable with what they wanted and they weren't comfortable with him. And that's why we are where we are.
What's next for New Jersey as we approach the trade deadline? Is it just anything not tied down must go? Well, what could we expect from the Devils here with about 6 weeks to go till the deadline?
Well, I think that's the big question. Like, number one, I mean, their UFAs, I think, will be available. Vatanen, I think there'll be a lot of interest in him. I'm curious to see guys like Andy Green, what the interest is like for them. But I think the bigger question from other teams is going to be, what about guys who are signed? Like, what are you guys thinking about Blake Coleman? You know, what are you guys thinking about Kyle Palmieri? Like, if Kyle Palmieri was available, I think there'd be a lineup. If Coleman was available, I think there'd be a lineup. I think that's going to be the big question, Peter, is never mind the stuff that's not nailed down. What about the stuff that is somewhat securely nailed down?
Just a little staple removal can get that thing out of there. Yeah.
That's right.
A team that's fairly close to New Jersey geographically, the New York Rangers, you said on headlines, yep, might be, they have three goalies. That would be one too many. Georgiev could be available from the Rangers. If he is, would that make him the top goalie available? Because you don't really see goalies available this time of year.
Well, I think he would definitely be on the list. You know, I think I'm curious to see what San Jose is going to do with Aaron Dell, who's a UFA, and starting to play there. I think that's going to be an interesting question. You know, he could definitely be a guy, depending on what the Sharks want to do, that could be out there. But Georgiev's intriguing because he's younger. He's shown a lot of potential. He's on a really inexpensive contract. I think the thing is, though, is that the Rangers have made it very clear that they want a young forward who's either playing or ready to play. So it's not going to be inexpensive. I know Toronto fans started throwing up their Jeremy Bracco trade proposals out there. I don't think that's going to be enough. I think the Rangers are searching higher than that. But I do think that there will be a lot of teams intrigued by Georgiev because, you know, he's got team control.
As far as the Calgary Flames are concerned with this team now, all of a sudden, some crazy how first place in the Pacific Division, lot of talk still around a top six forward, whether that be center or wing, and that discussion centers around Elias Lindholm. Is there a drop-dead date for them to figure out, aside from the obvious trade deadline, for them to figure out,
I did not hear anything about a drop-dead date. I think that what I'd actually heard was that you know, they got to kind of identify who their long-term target is. And I think that's kind of where they are right now is who are the players, because they prefer term as opposed to rental, who are the players with term who are available and that we like who we're going to want to target out there. So I don't think there's a deadline. I think they'd like to do it before the trade deadline, obviously, but I don't think there's a deadline now. I think the bigger question is, who do you guys identify and who do you guys go after?
The Flames do also have a couple pending UFAs that could be of note in discussions with a TJ Brody and a Travis Hamonic. Has there been any talk that either of those guys could be available if the Flames really wanted to do some big game hunting?
No, I think they would only be available if, you know, I don't think he wants to make their team worse. I think that the only way those guys go is if the team nosedives, or at least something happens where you're replacing what you're losing, right? Like, you guys, as you said, Peter, you guys are now atop the Pacific Division. He's not going to make you worse. So I think the only way those guys go is if there's something else coming in that makes sense.
Couple other notes before we let you go. There are reports of a women's 3-on-3 game being discussed for NHL All-Star Weekend. Is this the NHL dipping their toe a bit into the WNHL waters?
No, I think that is going to happen. I know I put it in my blog last week. They're looking at it. There's going to be a 3-on-3 game, Canada versus the United States. I think they're going to announce it sometime this week. You know, they're very careful about that. You know, the last thing that the commissioner, the whole women's hockey file is not been an easy file, because there is a league right now, and Bettman and Daly don't want to be seen as bullies with that league. And, you know, a number of the players who are boycotting want Bettman and Daly to push it. And I think it's not an easy spot for them. And, you know, I think that's the thing. Like, their point that as long as the current league, the National Women's League, is around, they're not going to do anything, that's going to still be their point. So I think they're happy to do a showcase. I think there's a lot of women's players who want them to do more, but I think they're also very conscious about, you know, not, you know, hurting that league. So it's a very delicate tightrope to walk, and I think they're looking at this and saying, this is a showcase we can provide on a very high stage, but we're really not looking to create our league at this point in time. Now, I have reported that there have been some plans for it. That has been disputed to me. I've seen it reported elsewhere. It wouldn't surprise me if, you know, just quietly they're talking about what they could do in that kind of a situation. But suffice it to say, Peter, they're being very careful about this.
With them being careful with the National Women's Hockey League, would there be an effort to try to make it equal parts players in that league and players who are currently boycotting, or would it just be best players are the best players, they're the ones in this game?
That's a great question, which I don't have an answer to. I just know that it hasn't always been easy to navigate the two sides. Like, years ago when they had that outdoor game, and remember they had the outdoor game in Gillette Stadium, New England, they had a women's game the day before, and I just know the negotiations between the two leagues were extremely difficult. And so if you were to tell me it's only going to be it's not going to be anybody from the NWHL, I could see it, only because I know that it hasn't always been easy to get those two sides to agree.
Last one for you. It's been an interesting day with everything going on in baseball, with the Houston Astros and the cheating scandal. GM and coach get suspended and then fired. But we're seeing now in the NFL and in Major League Baseball technology being used to try to gain a, some would say, unfair advantage. Is there any concern from an NHL perspective that teams might be starting to look for every advantage they can get with technology?
I'm sure there is. You know, it's funny. A couple of years ago, I had one team ask me about, like, do we ever provide certain parts of our feed to other teams that other clubs don't get access to? So, like, what are you talking about? And they go, oh, we heard something. And I checked, and, you know, I was told, no, that doesn't happen. And our guys kind of laughed about it a bit. But, I'm sure that I haven't heard about any cheating on the grand scale or something like that, but I can only imagine that everybody's always looking for an edge. I just don't know how you could cheat at that kind of a level in hockey. Like, I was trying to think today, like, Peter, what's the comparable?
Yeah, I can't think of one. Now, to be fair, I wouldn't have thought of see the sign and bang on a garbage can three times either, but I can't think of what it would be in hockey.
Like, if you told me they were going into a room and tampering with equipment, like, I mean, that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never, the only story I've ever heard about that one is I know the Kings in 93 always wondered, like, did the Canadians know whose sticks were illegal, for example, kind of thing. But, you know, I've never heard of anything approaching that level. But, you know, I do believe that there's a certain amount of, if you aren't cheating, you aren't trying attitude out there.
Right. Awesome stuff, Elliot. Always enjoy when we get to have the conversations and the other guys get to step out for a bit. So thanks for this, and we'll chat again soon.
All right, Peter. Take care. Enjoy the game tonight.
Elliot Friedman, brought to you by Calgary Lock & Safe, your store for everything door and more. Installing doors for your business, glass doors, sliding doors, and handicap accessible doors, plus frames and hardware. Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.